Good evening and welcome. It's KBC Arts, arts and entertainment in our region as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Later this evening, we'll hear from Bill Medley of the Righteous Brothers. We'll hear some history, of course, but some good behind-the-scenes stories as well. And we have the Righteous Brothers and Gary Puckett and the Union Gap coming to San Bernardino soon. As we go into the program tonight, it's a gentle reminder that our spring membership campaign is now going, just not the on-air portion of it. You can help keep the on-air portion of our membership campaign shorter by making a pledge early. Go to kvcrnews.org. Tonight's show is all about what's going on right here with the concert coming up in San Bernardino. Also coming soon, the Riverside International Film Festival, running April 17th through the 22nd. I spoke with Mathilde Barreau, who, while in France, was searching for an internship position and ended up as general coordinator for the film festival.
I'm really trying to involve everyone together. The communication for me, it's like the most important, because I was surprised with the fact that most of the people here never heard about the Riverside International Film Festival.
Yes.
And that's actually the 16th edition. So, I mean, we could be proud to be still here.
Yes.
But the fact is that we need to promote more the festival, even in itself, especially because it occurred like in downtown at the Box Theater.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a great place and we should know more about it. It's in April. That's a great month. So
that's such a wonderful point that you bring up, that it's right here, maybe 12 minutes away from where
yeah.
we're sitting right now, maybe about 20 from Redlands, depending on traffic. But, you know, so this is 16 years now?
Yeah, that's 16
years. Oh, my gosh.
Years. So that was kind of my first goal, is to create even, you know, flyers, but also like the website. We completely recreate a website to make it a little bit more attractive and eye-catching. So one of my ideas when I came was, okay, how can we talk about the festival, but in an interesting mm-hmm. way? So I decided to do nominees, and it was never before like that.
Right.
So each day from March, every day we promoted a nominee in each category, and we just decided to promote 11 categories. So it can be like best actor, best actress, best editing, best screenplay, mm-hmm. best director, et cetera, et cetera. So every day we promoted a movie, and on the website, but also on social media, because that's a great way to talk and like to talk to everybody. So also on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook.
You can't do anything without social media these days, no matter whether it's a musician or an artist or an art festival or a film festival, I should say. So you're the coordinator of this. This is an internship position. You came over. Gosh, interns could be getting coffee. You're running it.
Yeah, so what needs to be said is that the Riverside International Film Festival, it still exists. It's because it's only volunteers.
Ah.
So that's why like it's difficult to be completely involved in it, because it's not a full-time job like the others. I am, for the first time, a full-time job person.
Okay.
So the president is a teacher, and board members are deans and teachers, and they have another job, so they really needed a coordinator, and I hope next year they're going to have also a coordinator so the festival could grow a little bit more. And maybe that's the reason why it's not that famous, because no one really handled it until now. So.
Well, you hope next year there will be another coordinator. Do you hope next year you will be the coordinator?
Oh, I really would love to be.
Wonderful.
It's like, you know, nowadays, like, without any money, we cannot do anything.
Right,
so
right.
As everyone is volunteers, that means something. That means that we don't have that much money. So if it's a real success this year, maybe they will have enough money to pay me. But
well,
as a volunteer, I cannot come from France and just live here without any money.
No, that's not an easy thing to do. Not at all. Had you done anything of this magnitude as a student in France, in Paris?
Yes, I was the assistant of the general coordinator of the Champs-Élysées Film Festival. So I'm sure you know the Champs-Élysées Avenue.
Of course,
That's a festival which is a Franco-American film festival. It's also a festival which promoted independent movies. So that was kind of the same idea, but I was the assistant, so it's still not the same thing. And to be honest, every festival is completely different, because you really have to catch the identity and keep it. You have to be special every time. So I could not just take my experience and, you know, do the same here. first of all, the culture is completely different. I can tell you even the way of working is completely different. But also because cinema doesn't mean the same thing. Like in Paris, it's more intellectual to some point and mm-hmm. we like to talk a lot about it. And I guess here it's not like effectiveness. And also how we did the programming is completely mm-hmm. different. Yeah, I mean, that was great because the programmer, so it's Leslie Robertson, we really tried to promote really different movies. We were not focused on one subject. Until now, like the festival used to be around human conflict, trying to promote okay. also veterans documentaries.
Okay.
But actually, it's a broad subject, right? Human conflict, you can put so many films
sure,
in it.
Sure
so.
Could, yeah, yeah.
But this year, we tried to gather everyone, students, veterans, seniors, and everyone. So we tried to just did different events within the festival every day. For instance, we're going to open the festival with a free screening about a really tough subject, which is human trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought that Riverside was in the middle of the game because Riverside is in California. And unfortunately, like California is one of the worst states in the U.S. about yes. children trafficking. The main reason, like the obvious reasons, is the border with Mexico, but also mm-hmm. because it's a wealthy state. So
yes.
you have money, you have borders. And anyway, so Riverside, I think in next editions, we should keep this subject, which is really important for parents, for children, but for everyone, actually. And then every day we're trying to do like special events like that. Even for students, we're doing like a CBU, so California Baptist University mm-hmm. is doing its own festival within the festival.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it's half price for students. So we're really trying to bring people from
yes.
everywhere and everyone is welcome. And we're trying also to like screen horror movie, also
yes.
comedy.
Oh,
comedy for seniors, actually. It's called Senior Entourage. And it's a comedy and same, like it's half price for seniors because really we want to gather people from everywhere.
Yes.
And then I'm very proud of this day. It's a Women's Day and we're trying to promote women as mom, but also like as filmmaker because I don't know if you know that, but it's like it's still very difficult to be a woman filmmaker nowadays in the cinema industry. So we're trying to promote them. And we tried in the whole festival to have almost half of women filmmakers, but it's so difficult.
Oh, yes, yes.
Like out 200 movies that have been subscribed, only one third were from women.
Oh,
so
wow. Oh, my gosh.
Still very difficult to keep the balance.
Yes.
Of it, so
we want more representation, but my gosh, if it's not there to pull from, I mean, you can't include everything just because it was a female director or something to that effect. You mentioned some 200 films, I think, just a second ago.
Yeah.
So as the coordinator, are you watching all of these?
Yeah, I watch all the movies. That was that was my first task. Like in January in Paris, I was already watching movies from, so we have two platforms, Film Freeway and With About a Box. And I watched every day so many movies, to take notes about it and trying to see how we can put them together, what can we do. So another thing that I really wanted to do this year is to bring the team every time for each screening. So then the audience could talk to the producer, the filmmaker, the actors, because that's the real bonus, you know, with coming to a cinema. Like, I understand this trend, like, you have Netflix nowadays and you just have to click on play and just watch a movie. But if you come to the cinema, yeah. then you can meet people in real. And that's the real power of the Riverside International Film Festival, but in a festival in general. So
truly.
We really try to gather everyone. And I can tell you 90% of the filmmakers are going to come. So
beautiful. You brought up a wonderful point with Netflix and other subscription services. It is too easy to just stay on the couch at home. It's a little bit ridiculously easy. And you could say that you have a choice of international cinema on these, but it's somebody else's choice. Somebody else has decided what you're going to see, and you won't have the best exposure to films with this level. Are we talking about a mix of feature films as well as shorts, animated, as well as real life quotes there?
As I said, like we try to gather people from everywhere, so it also includes categories, but also like the kind of movies, so short films, animation, student films, so it's students' short films, and features and documentaries.
Nice.
So we really try to gather everything, and especially because like a Q&A about a feature is not the same Q&A about documentary, because documentary, you know, it's based on real. You really, most of the time, filmmakers have so much to talk about it, and it's nice. Really interesting to listen to them, because that's the only way to listen to them, especially in independent movie, because, you know, independent movies means that they don't have lots of money. So
Right. They
need to have someone which promote them and which just gave them the voice. So we are trying to do it.
So this is giving a wonderful opportunity, not only for independent filmmakers, but you mentioned students. And that's a really cool thing. This is an opportunity. It's not just something where, oh, they can share their work and show, hey, this is what I'm working on. But it could be a stepping stone for that person to go on to, for lack of a better way of saying it, bigger and better things. That's really nice about this festival.
Yeah, so just about the students' movies, the thing is that also it will be, for most of them, it will be the first time they're going to see their movies on the big civil screen.
Oh.
And that changed everything most of the time. Because, you know, like, I know you have big TVs, but it's still not the same, like, in the cinema with the Dolby sound, etc. So that's the first point. And the other point is, like, we're trying also with bringing all the filmmakers, producers, actors, we're also trying to do, like, a professional market at the same time. And so people can talk to each other. And we know how it is, just a word of network. That's how cinema lives.
Yep. And again, that is a phenomenal opportunity, not only for the students, but for all filmmakers that are going to be there. This is a great networking. This is going to be great for the casual viewer. This is going to be great for a lot of people. I'm curious, as we were talking, if there were any, say, categories that had to be invented once you saw how many films, like maybe you weren't even considering doing horror, for example, and then you found, okay, wow, we've just gotten 28 slasher films or whatever. Anything like that?
We thought about doing a category about experimental movies because we had a lot of experimental movies. I guess when you're young as a filmmaker, you want to try many things. And that's the reason why we had lots of experimental movies. So even My Name is Maisha is a movie from Riverside. And as you know, Riverside International Film Festival, we had to have at least one movie from Riverside. And so we were glad to have it. And actually, it's not only just a good movie from Riverside, it's actually a real good movie.
It's a good movie.
And also, in terms of quality, like the aesthetic of it is really interesting. And it's not just a try, it's a real successful try. Like, that is really interesting. And I really hope like people will like it, because we had lots of experimental movies. So we didn't keep that much of experimental movie because we didn't want to target just one audience.
Right.
As I
right.
say. We wanted to target students, but also seniors, but also children, but also people who just like cinema, but not that much. And so they could understand everything. So that's also something that you have to be careful when you're a coordinator and a programmer, not focus too much on one subject, because I think it can be dangerous, especially in a city like Riverside. It's not that big. So we need to give the envy to everybody to come and not just one small audience.
Yes.
So
that sounds wonderful. And the festival itself has been growing over the years, and hopefully it will, of course, continue to grow. But one thing that we haven't touched on, and maybe we can wrap with this, there's a gala event. Can you talk about this? Is it open to the public?
Yeah. So the festival is from 17th to 22nd, and the first time that it's so short, because it used to be 10 days and now it's just 5 days. And that's why we wanted to make it more powerful. And it used to start with a gala ceremony, but this year we put it at the end, actually. So we did the reverse. And so the gala is a special event just to enjoy. There is, like, in cinema field, there is two part of it, the artistic part. And also, as we know, Hollywood is so close from Riverside.
Yes.
It's also, you know, stress and and money, and you see what I mean. And so the gala is more like this, like everyone is dressed up to the lime and just enjoying a good evening, watching a movie, but after talking and eating and drinking. And yeah, that's more like a real entertainment.
Cool.
Yeah, that's the opportunity to gather once more many people, many different people. And so it's everyone is welcome to this event, the gala ceremony. You just have to pay your ticket and then you're in.
Wonderful. There's, I'm sure, a phone number, but it's really easiest, I think, if people know the website to go to.
Yeah, the website, from the website, so it's riversidefilmfestival.org, and you can buy your ticket from the website. You can watch all the nominees, and we try to put all the trailers too, so maybe it's going to give you the envy to watch the movie with just a trailer of 20 seconds. So
fantastic.
You can have lots of information on it, and the schedule, of course, the schedule of the programming.
Mathilde Barreau, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. This was really nice and fun, and it's something to look forward to. And this is coming up in the very near future here. Thanks so much again for coming in.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Mathilde Barreau, General Coordinator for the Riverside International Film Festival, coming up April 17th through the 22nd. Again, more at riversidefilmfestival.org. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. I'm David Fleming. Coming up April 28th at the California Theater in San Bernardino, Affordable Music Productions presents The Legends of Blue-Eyed Soul and Rock and Roll with Gary Puckett and the Union Gap and the Righteous Brothers. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. So why would I be playing Journey in the background? Now, the vocals are not those of Steve Perry, but those of Bucky Hurd, performing with Bill Medley as the Righteous Brothers. We'll get to the Journey thing. Actually, start with the most recent of events, all things relative, and that is the grouping of you and Bucky Hurd. This has only been since 2016, but gosh, some 40 shows alone in 2016 in Vegas.
Yeah, well, actually, we're about 3 months into our third year together, and it's been remarkably smooth and remarkably good, you know, on a lot of different levels. You know, he's a great partner, he's a great friend. You know, he's a hard-working guy and just sings phenomenal, so it's pretty wonderful. Bucky and I have been friends since 06, and I went in to see him because he was doing some Journey songs in a show, and I was curious to find out how well he could do those, and I went in, and he knocked me out. And I had my manager and just some real close friends in the business, and that's not saying that I should put the Righteous Brothers back together and, you know, keep bringing that music out to the people, you know. So after I heard Bucky sing Steve Perry, Journey, you know, it dawned on me, it's kind of the perfect storm. And Harrah's in Las Vegas wanted me to do a residency show, and literally it all came down in about the same week. And I'd been tossing the idea around for a couple of years only because people were bugging me to do it. And I actually tried a couple of guys, you know, called them on stage and sang with them, and I just didn't feel it. It didn't feel right emotionally and artistically. So it just all came down, and Bucky and I met, and I said, listen, here's what I'm thinking about doing. I said, would you like to be a Righteous Brother? He said, no. I'm just teasing because he's sitting here. I said, but it pays $300 a week. He said, I'm in. You know, he was excited about doing it, and we sat down at the piano and went over some songs, and it was just a perfect marriage. You know, we knew vocally that this was going to really work and work well, because I always told Bucky, I said, I don't need you to sound like Bobby, but I need you to sing like Bobby. Mm. And because he was influenced by Bobby, you know, sometimes he sounds a lot like Bobby. But that was just one half of it, that he could do it. The other half, maybe the other three quarters to me is, am I going to like this guy? Am I going to have fun with this guy? Are we going to have good chemistry on the stage? And all of it came true, you know, so I'm just delighted.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I had read the thing about him performing tributes to Journey, and I caught some of his performances actually with that. And I would have to say that beyond Arnel Pineda, the modern lead singer of Journey, I don't know who else might catch Steve Perry's sound and range and, most importantly, feel. And that would have to be one of the most important factors there, the feel. Other people could hit the notes.
Yeah, the feel is really the deal, and feel is the deal. Hey,
nice.
We'll write a song. No, he did a phenomenal job at that, so that's why I knew he could fill in for Bob.
Nice. And that initial meeting that you mentioned with the managers contacting him, were you actually face-to-face when he heard of the offer or when he accepted? Were you able to witness that?
Yeah, I mean, I really did it without anybody else. I kept my manager and all my friends out of it because, you know, opinions, you know, everybody's got an opinion. And I, at this point, I was only interested in my opinion because I'm the one that has to live it out.
That's right.
But no, we went and had a hamburger at Fuddruckers and we talked about it. And I said, what do you think? He said, guys, I would love to do it. Let me talk to my family. Then we met and we had dinner. And I said, you're in. Let's do this thing.
Wow.
And we had 3 months booked at Harrah's because they didn't know how we were going to do. You know, none of us knew.
Sure.
You know, I had two questions when we put this together was, does anybody care that there's a Righteous Brothers? And will they accept Bucky Hurd as, you know, one of the Righteous Brothers? And the first job we did was at Laughlin. We went there because we could do 5 days in a row and kind of put this on stage at least a little bit and get comfortable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I walk into the dressing room. Opening night, I asked our musical director, Tim Lee, I said, how are we doing? He said, you're sold out for 5 days. I said, well, that answers that question.
Yes, indeed.
And so we had to hit the stage running. And I just told Bucky, relax and enjoy the ride. You know, I've been a Righteous Brother a long time. I know how to do this. And Bucky sings a song, Crying, you know, the Roy Orbison song.
Oh, yes.
And I put it at the beginning of the show because I wanted people right away to get to know that this guy is a real singer, and that's a real song. So he sang Crying, and I leave the stage, and when I came back, he was getting a standing ovation. I said, well, I guess that answers that question, too. So all my questions were answered in about 20 minutes.
Indeed. Oh, my goodness.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, I was checking out Bucky, and I caught his rendition of Crying also. It is right there. I mean, it's his own, but, you know, Don McLean did the song well after Roy Orbison, and was a good version, but it wasn't like Roy. And I think that Bucky really captures the spirit of Roy Orbison on this one while still making it his own.
Yeah, he makes it his own. And you can't, you know, it's such a great song, and Roy was so great that you don't want to screw around with that much, you know?
Right.
You just sing the song and believe the song, and the audience is going to love it.
That's it. The belief. I'm glad you said that. That was hovering around there just on the tip of my brain.
Yeah.
Righteous Brothers will be in San Bernardino, along with Gary Puckett and Union Gap at the California Theater. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts. Well, in this current lineup, then, I would hope that you do still have Ebb and Tide. This being a Hatfield dominant song, do you still do Ebb and Tide then with Bucky in?
Yeah, Bucky does Ebb Tide. I do Unchained Melody because it's kind of a tribute to Bobby, and we show a video, you know, of Bob and Bob and I when we were younger. And so I do a real kind of laid-back, emotional approach to the song, you know, and we show the video. And I didn't think it was fair that Bucky would have to sing Unchained Melody. That's too big of a gun to your head, I think, you know.
Yes. That goes beyond Shoes to Fill. That's just one of the most iconic.
Yes, it does. Yeah. I mean, that's just making him walk out there with his pants down. I mean, you know, that's just not fair. So I said, I'll do that one, at least for a couple of years.
Is that what we still have going then? When we get to see you April 28th, we'll be seeing the video presentation and you doing that song solo?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Wonderful. That's something well worth looking forward to. Oh my gosh. That is, in essence, the most recent. This grouping starting in 2016 and we're barely into 2018. I'd like to go back sometime, Dirty Dancing, that's only 30 years back, but how about a little over 50 years ago, in that this is the beginning, the Paramours and the Variations, just how you two ended up together. What I want to push is that I've read things that you two left to be a duo, but it seems to me that bands broke up and were left with you two.
You know, anybody you talk to is going to tell you a magical story of how they had success, you know?
Sure.
Because it is a magic act. It isn't like you go to college and get your degree and say, here you are. Now you have hit records and you're a celebrity, you know. But, yeah, Bobby had his group, The Variations, and I had my group, The Paramours. I heard about Bobby. And in those days, I'm when you talk about 1961, 62, you know, there wasn't any rock and roll bands. I mean, Bobby and I had the only two rock and roll bands in Orange County. Bobby was raised in Anaheim, and I was raised in Santa Ana. So I heard about him. He heard about me. I went in to see him, and he came in to see me, and I was floored by the way this guy sang. And then, oddly enough, a mutual friend of ours had been working Las Vegas a lot and was tired of working Vegas, and he was an Orange County guy, and he wanted to put together a band that could get a lot of work. So he took Bobby and Bobby's drummer and myself and my guitar player and put us all together. So there was five of us. We went as the Paramours. But the minute Bobby and I were, you know, in the same band together, we just clicked musically right away. So we do a lot of duets and a lot of that rhythm and blues stuff. And another friend of mine, Ray Maxwell, who owned Moongrove Records from Garden Grove, came in, and I had done some background work for him and this and that. He said, man, I love that song that you said that you wrote in the show. I said, you mean Little Latin Loopy Lou? He said,
yes.
Yeah. God, he said, I love that song. And the only reason we were doing it is because the crowd loved it and they would dance to it. He said, why don't we record that? We said, well, okay, but it's just Bob and I. So we went up and we recorded Little Latin Loopy Lou. And in the meantime, you know, this is when Orange County was very white.
Sure.
Very white back there in the late 50s and 60s. But there was a Marine base there, El Toro Marine Base, you know. And a lot of the black Marines heard that there was these two guys down at the club singing rhythm and blues. So a lot of the black Marines started coming in. And, you know, if a black guy loved your car, he might would say, boy, that's a righteous looking car, you know, which meant good. Whereas white guys would have said, oh, what a bitchin' looking car. They say, and that's a righteous looking car. And if they liked you as a friend, they would call you a brother. So a lot of times when Bobby and I were coming to work or this and that, they would say, hey, Righteous Brother, how you doing? Which meant good friend. And so when we recorded Little Latin Loopy Lou, we needed a name. I think it was Bobby that suggested, why don't we use a name that the Marines have been calling us, you know, Righteous Brothers. I said, okay. I mean, his first idea was, Bobby Hatfield and friends. I'm just kidding. He used to joke about that. So then we put Righteous Brothers on there, and actually nothing happened with the song. And we were leaving, our contract was up at the nightclub where we were working, and we were walking out the back door, and there's a good chance that Bobby and I would have never seen each other again. I mean, we loved each other, but we were just from different neighborhoods, you know?
Sure.
But a mutual friend of ours, Mike Patterson, who was working at the Rendezvous Ballroom where all that surf music was happening, he came to us and begged us to come down there and work as the Righteous Brothers, and his band would back us. So we did. We went down there, and we were singing the Latin Loopy Loo in the show, and we were drawing about, it was a huge ballroom. It seated, you know, I mean, there was about 2,000 kids there, and they would ask us to sing Loopy Loo because we were doing it in the show, and they said, "Well, I love that." And we said, "Well, you probably can buy it, you know, if you..." So 2,000 kids went out and bought Little Latin Loopy Loo.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow.
And the radio stations heard about it, and they started playing it, and boy, we just never looked back.
Oh, my gosh. Wow, what a way just to... That's the most direct marketing I've ever heard of. That's straight to the kids' mind. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. That's music from The Righteous Brothers, in conversation with original member Bill Medley. The Righteous Brothers will be in San Bernardino quite soon, more in just a little over a minute. You're listening to KVCR. It's on 91.9 KVCR. Also at kvcrnews.org, I'm David Fleming. Back now to conversation with Bill Medley and music from The Righteous Brothers, who along with Gary Puckett and the Union Gap will be at the California Theater in San Bernardino April 28th. More at affordablemusicproductions.com.
You never close your eyes anymore when I kiss your lips. And there's no tenderness like before in your fingertips.
So you had a few albums early with Moonglow, and then tell me about your encounter, how you ended up with Phil Spector, him meeting you. You were performing somewhere at the same place the Ronettes were. How did that work out?
Yeah, I think we were in San Francisco, and yeah, we had had the rock and roll thing with Moonglow, My Babe, Coco Joe, and Little Latin Loopy Loo and that stuff, and we were working a big, big show at the Cow Palace in San Francisco, and Phil was there with the Ronettes and this and that and all that. And when we got home, Moonglow Records, Ray Maxwell had called me and said, "Listen, Phil Spector wants to produce you. Are you interested?" And we loved Phil Spector records, but we were rhythm and blues singers, and we thought that the records he was making were kind of bubblegum, you know what I mean, or very poppy.
Oh, sure, they were.
Yeah, but we said, well, we'll have a meeting with him, and we decided to do it, and he went to Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil and said, write him a song, and they wrote You've Lost That Love and Feeling. And I know everybody expects a horror story about Phil Spector, but he was quite wonderful with us.
Good.
He pushed us hard, but it was good that he did, because it just kept getting better.
And so he had Barry and Cynthia write this song for you guys. Did Barry and Cynthia sort of sing it for you? What I'm trying to get to is if you recall actually, you know, when you first saw it or sang it or heard Barry and Cynthia do it for you. I want to know how it felt for you and just how it hit you. Or did it?
Yeah, the truth is that Phil Spector and Barry Mann sang it for us. And they both had real high, thin, kind of thin voices. Not bad thin, but you know what
sure,
I mean. Just
sure.
Thin voices. And when they sang it to us, it was nothing like what it ended up being, because they would sing it and they wanted it kind of fast and it felt kind of bubblegummy, you know. You never close your eyes anymore, you know.
Oh, my
you
gosh.
Lost that love.
That's not a four on the floor
and
song.
And I couldn't get up to that one. You lost that love. I couldn't get up there to hit that note. I said, you're going to have to lower it. And so they would lower it a little, and we'd sing it, and still couldn't hit the note. And every time we would lower it, Phil Spector slowed it down. So by the time we got down to the key of C, it was, you never close your eyes. and it was slow, and I was singing in my baritone voice, and it just became a different song.
It went beyond being more comfortable to sing. Did it make more sense then at that point?
Yeah, it went from kind of this, a great song, but more bubblegum feel. And then by the time we slowed it down and we were singing it, attacking it with more emotion other than just trying to make a hit record, It just became, and I think that's why it's done so well over these years, is that I think it was the first dramatic love song that kids got to buy into, you know, because they were fed all this bubblegum stuff, and all kids were just, you know, I want more than that. And I think Love and Feeling did that for them. I think it was just a meaningful, soulful, you know, everybody's had their heart broken, and this was, I think, a good way of explaining it.
Yeah, it's a song that you feel. It's not just singing words over three chords.
Yeah.
Just one thing on that. Did you happen to see Top Gun? And did you just cringe when you heard Tom Cruise sing this song?
Well, we didn't know it was in the movie, and people told us it was in the movie. But I've always said it's pretty cool that our song is Tom Cruise's pickup line. That's pretty hip. I'll buy that. I'll take that.
Okay, that's an endorsement. Good, good. Bring back. Moving on then to, this would still be with Spector, but again, one of the biggest of your tunes, Unchained Melody. And at one point, I do understand that there were, with the remake of this much later, two versions of the song by the same group, you guys, at the same time on the charts. That is a one and only, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it became a real strange thing. And actually, Unchained Melody, I produced. I produced Unchained Melody because I produced all of our albums. Phil Spector asked me to, he knew I had produced the first albums, and he said, listen, I'm going to take too long and I'm going to spend too much money. You do the albums. So I produced Unchained Melody, and it became a hit in the 60s, and Unchained Melody was a B-side.
Yes.
It was a B-side of a Phil Spector song, Hung on You, that Carole King and Jerry Goffin wrote. And then, you know, they put it in the movie Ghost.
Yes.
And I knew because of Top Gun, if they would have released Love and Feeling when Top Gun came out, it would have been a million seller all over again. I knew it, or I felt it. And then when Unchained Melody ended up in Ghost, I said, you know, man, find out if they're going to release this as a single. And we found out that they weren't. So I said, well, let's go in and re-record it and put it out. And Curb Records was real behind it. We did it. It sold a million copies. And the original version became a hit at the same time as the remake. They were both in the top 15 at the same time.
That is just too cool. That is something that, again, I've never heard of that, of another group, and I don't know that we will. That's really amazing. I'd read that you had produced Unchained Melody, so I wanted to get this straight on that one also. Now, this is another one that goes back to the movies. When they used it for Ghost, did you know what they'd be using it for?
No, we didn't have a clue until the movie was out that it was even in Ghost. They didn't ask us. You know, they just made a deal with the record company or whatever, whoever. You know, with Dirty Dancing, of course, you know, they had to come to me and ask. So I obviously knew all about that. Yeah. But Love and Feeling and Top Gun and Unchained and Ghost, we didn't know until after the movies were out.
Gotcha. Okay.
God's been a lover to you.
Well, since we're speaking about it anyway, just a quick mention on a couple of other movies. And I think, with all due respect, these were kind of generic movies of the time. A Swingin' Summer and Beach Ball. Okay, yeah, right.
Oh, man.
Yeah, exactly. But this was right at the height, I suppose, of the early hits. Were you guys just going in and playing yourselves as the third band on the left at the Beach Blanket Bingo
kind of thing? Yeah, that was probably before Love and Feeling. I think, you know, they threw us in these movies. Swing Summer was the first one we did up in Lake Arrowhead. And it was Raquel Welch's first movie.
Yes, indeed.
I mean, they were one-day movies, man. We just went in and did our little bing, bang, bing, and we were out of there,
gotcha.
You know.
Okay.
We didn't pay much attention to it.
Gotcha. That's such a quick side note, but I mentioned Johnny Tillotson. He went in to do, I think it was called The Fat Spy, and he agreed to do the movie so that he could meet Jane Mansfield. And was so excited about that. But she filmed on a different day. And he didn't know that. And so when he showed up, though, he did meet Phyllis Diller and become friends with her. So it was a shocker, but he...
Not close, but yeah. No cigar.
He valued that friendship, though, for the rest of her life.
Oh,
so,
God,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
So I guess moving away from Spectre, there was Soul and Inspiration. I understand. I'd love to hear the story of this because I understand it was started to have been written for you earlier with Spectre, but then finished later after the move to Verve. Is this right?
Yeah. When we went with Phil Spectre, Phil was still involved. We were on Phyllis Records, you know, Love and Feeling was, but he had leased the remainder of our contract to Moonglow, and somehow, some way, Moonglow and Phil Spectre got into a dispute. And Spectre was saying, we need to record, and Moonglow was saying, nope, don't go in and record. And so our agent, Jerry Prentshow, came in and said, I have a way to fix this. MGM wants to pay you $1 million. Sign with them, and they will pay all legal expense. And we said, let's go.
Done.
But we had recorded Love and Feeling, and I think we were just coming back from England. We were back in New York with Barry and Cynthia working on the follow-up record, and yeah, Soul and Inspiration. And somehow, some way, Phil got in an argument or something or dispute with Barry and Cynthia, and we got a call and said, never mind, go back to California, we're not going to do that song or something. And so we went back to California and started working with Carole King on our follow-up. But when we left Phil Spector, I called Barry Mann, and I said, Barry, where's that song you were teaching us? Soul and Inspiration. He said, oh, I don't know. He said, hell, I didn't even finish writing it. I said, well, finish writing it and send it to me. And once again, that was a song I produced because we had left Phil, which, by the way, is a job that I didn't ask for and didn't want. He finished the song, sent us the tape, and on the cassette, I think there was four other songs that I turned down that they had written. And I turned all of them down. They all became huge hits. I think Kicks just keep getting by. And We Gotta Get Out of This Place.
No way.
Yeah. If you listen to it, you can hear how or why that was a righteous little song. But, you know, and that worked out fine. I mean, went to number one, and it was, in reality, probably a better Righteous Brother record than Love and Feeling, only as a group. Because it featured both of us. Love and Feeling was kind of a one-sided thing. Kind of like Unchained Melody was all Bobby.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And Love and Feeling was a lot of my vocal. But I always thought, and a lot of other artists think, you know, Soul and Inspiration was just, you know, a really great record because of that.
Music from the Righteous Brothers in conversation with original member Bill Medley. The Righteous Brothers will be in San Bernardino along with Gary Puckett and Union Gap at the California Theater. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. I'm David Fleming with you for KVC Arts. Just a few more things, and again, I appreciate your time. I want to go into one thing anyway that's into my lifetime, And we're talking about Rock and Roll Heaven. When you guys got back together after, I guess, you know, what was it, a 4 or 5 year hiatus or something? Well, it was announced on the Sonny and Cher show, to the best of my knowledge and what I've read on. But what was actually the lead up to that? I'm sure you guys weren't on the show and then decided to do it. What led up to that?
Well, we kind of got, or I'll take the blame for this. I wanted to get out there and try Bill Medley. That's how I started in the business, and I wanted to finish that dream. Mm. You know, I got hijacked by the Righteous Brothers.
For shame.
Which was a good hijack. It was wonderful. Yes. But I wanted to go out and experience, you know, and see how I could do on my own and literally just finish that dream. And, you know, after 6 years of banging around, I was doing fine. I was doing good, but I had lost my voice.
Mm.
And they said I'd never sing again.
Oh.
Which I don't want to scare the audience away. My voice is better now than it's ever been. So Bobby and I met, and it was a perfect time for Bob to want to get back with the Righteous Brothers. So financially, it was kind of a financial move, you know, to put Bobby and I back together in 74, and which really shows that you really can't do anything for money. You know, it just needs to be... It's got to come from your heart. You want to get back together because you can't wait to get back together. Well, I just wasn't in good shape, and Bobby was, you know, he was in better shape than I was. But we went back together, and our manager, David Cohen, had put together a record deal with Haven, Dennis Lambert and Brian Potter. And we wanted to go with them because we wanted producers that owned the record company and that wrote all their own songs. They didn't write Rock and Roll Heaven, but they knew it was a hit.
Right.
And so, Jesus, I think we hadn't even signed with them yet, and we got a phone call and said, can you guys come up tomorrow night and record this song? Because I think somebody else was going to record it and put it out, because it had been recorded by the Climax Band or something, one of those groups.
Yes, it was Climax,
years ago.
Exactly, yes.
So Brian and Dennis, they rewrote, I think, the second verse to kind of bring it up to date in those days. We went in and recorded it, and it was a hit record before we could even turn around. And we didn't have an album, so we scrambled and went in the studio and got an album done. And it wasn't a real Righteous Brother record. It was more of a hit record, you know, Love and Feeling, Soul and Inspiration, Unchained Melody. Those are songs that kind of go straight to your heart.
Sure.
I think Rock and Roll Heaven was kind of a different kind of record, you know?
Yes.
But thank God, it was a big hit record.
I had read that you, or both of you, I'm not sure, at first questioned whether the song did have a Righteous Brothers feel to it. Was it when you first sang it with Bobby that it felt right, or was it later after you heard the recording that, yes, this is Righteous Brothers material?
No, Bobby and I always knew in the studio when we started singing the songs, once we started singing it, we knew that, no, this is going to end up being a good Righteous Brother record, yeah.
I had the time of my life. No, I never felt like this before. Yes, I swear, it's a truth, and I owe it all to you.
'Cause I've had the time of my life, and I owe it all to you.
Oh. I've been waiting for so long. Now I finally found someone to stand by me. Love.
I want to address one more thing. We mentioned Dirty Dancing a couple of times, and a lot of people know of this duo with Jennifer Warnes, and I'm not sure if people my age, if people really associated that with, quote, the same guy from the Righteous Brothers. It's my understanding, though, tell me if this is true, please, that Jennifer Warnes said that she would sing this when she was approached. She said that she would sing it if she could sing it with you. Is that right?
Yeah, they had called me and my daughter, who's actually in the show now and singing Time of My Life with me now, was being born right when they called me, and my wife was pregnant. and they called me to do the song for the movie, and I wasn't very excited about it. I was more excited about my daughter being born, and I promised my wife I'd be there, and they wanted me to go to New York. I live in Newport Beach. I said, no, I can't do it. And they said, no, you've got to do it. You're the voice for Patrick Swayze. I said, who? I didn't know who Patrick Swayze or Jennifer Grey or anybody was. But that movie made him huge. But they said, no, you're the guy. And I said, well, I can't do it until after my daughter's born. Then Jimmy Einer, he called me about every week to see if Paula had our child yet. And finally, she did. And that's when he said, listen, Jennifer Warnes wants to do this if she can sing it with you. And I was, and still now, I'm a huge Jennifer Warnes fan. And she was kind of an Orange County girl. So I just thought that was a great mix. But the truth is we went in and recorded it just to work together. We didn't think that the song was going to be a hit. We knew the song would only be a hit if the movie was going to be a hit, and we didn't think the movie had a shot. We'd never even seen it, but we just figured, no, this is... So it was a real surprise, but a wonderful, wonderful surprise.
Now, one of the funny things about that, I have to say, is one of the dominant lines from that movie and near the end of it actually is, nobody puts baby in the corner.
Yeah.
And so with you, nobody put baby in the corner. That's great.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's so cool to be on stage with my daughter, only because she's so good. She's a really, really good singer. And, you know, I'm just living a blessed life, man. I got the greatest partner in the world, and I got the greatest family in the world. And I'm 77, and I'm still singing Little Latin Loopy Loo.
That is great.
Thank you.
Definitely, definitely. You mentioned crying earlier, bringing Bucky in. Is that what you typically open your shows with here, if you're performing with the Righteous Brothers then?
No, it's about the fifth or sixth song in.
Okay.
You know, we do Loopy Loo, Just Once in My Life, Soul and Inspiration, a lot of songs before we get to that. But it was important to me that they hear Bucky as Bucky. You know,
yes,
and
indeed.
See what a great singer he is. He's not just some guy just filling in for Bobby. He's a great singer. And I say, this isn't the Righteous Brothers song, but I asked Bucky if he would do it in the show because I heard him doing it in Branson. So that's why it's in there, but it's really in there. Well, it's in there because it's one of my favorite songs by one of my favorite artists, but it's also there because I just wanted to point out who this guy is. This is a real singer on his own.
Yes. It's not only a treat to be able to have you, but to have Bucky in there as well. It's something that so many people here are looking forward to. That's Conversation with Bill Medley. The Righteous Brothers will be in San Bernardino, along with Gary Puckett and Union Gap at the California Theater. More at affordablemusicproductions.com. And that's just about going to wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Mathilde Barreau, General Coordinator for the Riverside International Film Festival, coming up April 17th through the 22nd. Again, more at riversidefilmfestival.org. Here at KVCR, thanks to Lillian Vasquez, Rick Dulock, Benjamin Perper, Isel Quapio, Emmanuel Rogers, and Jessica Greenwell. Beyond the music of the Righteous Brothers, music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, behind us now, for example, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. You can hear past KVC Arts programs at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. And speaking of which, a really cool message now from Eva Mikhailovna with Eva and the Vagabonds, herself on KVC Arts a few times, and American Parlor Songbook as well. Thank you, Eva.